I'm Ava Hartling. Welcome back to the Brand is Female podcast. This season of our podcast is brought to you by TD Bank Group Women in Enterprise. TD helps women in business achieve success and growth through its program of educational workshops, financing, and mentorship. Visit thebrandisfemale.com/podcast and follow the link to find out how TD can help you. In this episode, I'm chatting with Ali Mama Leader, owner and CEO of Organic Traditions, a brand of superfoods packaged under a variety of blends or as single ingredients. If you shop in natural health food stores, you've come across their products over the past few years for sure. Ali took over the business from her father, who founded the brand over 20 years ago, and she's been at the helm for several years now. She's been focused on reinventing the brand, creating new products, really giving a new vision and direction. The company today is doing its first round of capital fundraising. It's a very exciting time for the brand, especially as the category is taking off. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. It's a wonderful story of family succession within a successful Canadian brand. Ali, it's a pleasure to welcome you on the Brand is Female podcast today. Thanks for making time to speak with me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat.
I'm excited to chat too. And part of it is because I am a huge fan of your products, and natural products is obviously a category that, well, not obviously, but you and I have had a chat before. It's a product category that I am very passionate and interested about. So I want to get into everything that you've been doing from a product building, a brand building standpoint. But first, we're going to go back in time a little bit. I like to start these conversations by asking guests, growing up, what were you thinking of doing later in life as a career? And obviously the business has been a family business for some time. So I wonder if this played a role in you picturing what kind of profession you saw yourself doing in life.
Yeah, it's funny. I think that growing up, there was kind of three phases of what I thought I would do. So phase one was I wanted to be a pop star. I wanted to be Britney Spears or Christina Aguilera. That is my era. I was born in 1986. And that is what I thought I was meant to do. So I was very into singing and dancing and all things creative. So that was phase one. It wasn't real, but you know, we all have those aspirations. Phase two, I wanted to be a lawyer. I was actually a great student. So I loved school. I loved university. I loved high school and was typically good at essay writing and oral presentations and things like that. And I thought that I would be a lawyer. And what happened is I ended up going to university in Denmark for international relations. I did my master's there. And I just fell in love with the travel industry and had so many international friends. And really wanted to work in hospitality after that experience of being abroad for school for so many years. I ended up living there for about 5 years. And so what happened is I ended up going into corporate communications at Fairmont Hotels and Resorts. Kind of came out of nowhere, but I said, okay, I want to work in hospitality. And who are the two biggest like Canadian hospitality brands? And it's either Fairmont or the Four Seasons that had corporate headquarters in Canada and in Toronto, where I'm from. So I applied to Fairmont. I just kind of manifested that. I was like, no matter what, one of those two companies, that's where I need to be. And started as an intern and worked my way up in communications. And I loved it. But in the background, while all of this was happening my whole life, my dad was an entrepreneur, a serial entrepreneur. And I was at the same time as all of this love of travel and international relations and these other things I was studying, I was always involved in the natural foods and CPG industry. So I was going to trade shows even when I lived overseas for natural products in Sweden, in Denmark, in Norway, in Germany, all over. And I knew deep down that at some point I was going to end up working with him in Organic Traditions because I believed so deeply in our brand and I saw what was happening in the market. But at the time, I didn't know what that would look like. I didn't know, oh, am I going to fully lead the company? Like, I didn't really give it that much thought. I just knew that you know, I'm an entrepreneur as well, but I hadn't tapped into it fully. And so fast forward a number of years, I moved home. I was working for Fairmont, which is an excellent company, by the way. They really set the bar very high. And I was just seeing so many changes in the natural food space. I was seeing more and more competitors come in, but I was also seeing it becoming more widely accepted. You know, grocery stores were all adding a store within a store concept. So they all had those organic or those natural sets and aisles. And I was just like, we still have such a big opportunity to build organic traditions into a household name. And I felt like I needed to be a part of it because I had always been passionate about it behind the scenes. And so in 2017, that's when I put my entrepreneur hat on fully and came on board. I overlapped with my dad for about a year at that point. It was his brand that he started. And after about a year, he was like, you've got this, like, you should run the business. And that's kind of the short version of the story, but we overlapped and that was 8 years ago. So I've been building the team and kind of innovating and taking the business and kind of rebuilding it from the inside out ever since then.
Love that so much. And you mentioned your dad was a serial entrepreneur. What kind of other businesses did he have that you experienced before starting Organic Traditions?
Yeah. In his earlier years, he was involved in furniture manufacturing, and then he was involved in glass block. You know, like in South Beach or like in the 80s, the like blocks made out of glass.
Yes. They were everywhere.
Yeah. So he was one of the most successful companies in Canada that was doing that. So he did a huge part of the Toronto airport and the Google offices and things like that. And he loved it. But when he started to face his own health issues with like gut health, digestion, he was overweight. He turned to superfoods. He really believes like food can be the number one form of medicine. And when he kind of cured himself through using superfoods and holistic wellness practices, he just became so absolutely passionate about that. And because he's such an entrepreneur, he's like, now this is what I need to do. Like, he's one of those guys that nothing gives him more pleasure than seeing someone positively impacted by something he told them to do. So he's like, everybody needs to know about this. And that's where that next journey of entrepreneurship started for him, shifting from things like construction and glass block into a completely different industry. And that was in the late 90s.
Gotcha. And, you know, in some cases, children of entrepreneurs, like we're kind of seeing two scenarios. It's either you're interested in being involved in the family business and taking over. Unfortunately, we also see a lot of children who are not interested in being involved with the family business and want to do something completely different. And I'm curious if you had any siblings or if it's just you.
I do have a younger brother. It's funny. So my younger brother and my dad live on a farm together now near Ottawa, and they're doing a different type of like entrepreneurial project there together where they're farming like 52 acres of fresh golden berries. So they're kind of on their own side project. But it's true. When you're growing up and you have an entrepreneur for a parent, I think whether you realize it or not, you really do end up having a lot more grit. You really see them persevering through challenge after challenge, working long hours, and it does do something to you. But I'm really grateful that it wasn't even intentional, but I'm really grateful that I worked in corporate and worked in some other organizations before coming and stepping into something that's a family business. Because one pitfall I think of a family business, or if you're like a second generation, third generation founder in a family business, if you've only ever worked in a family business and that's all you've known, it's really hard to add value and to understand what more is possible or ask for the help that you need because you're just kind of in this system that's in place. And I feel like I benefited so much from seeing how these huge organizations were run so well. And even though it was in a totally different industry, I learned so much about leadership and being on a team with people. And my dad had built an incredible foundation, but he was a solopreneur. He didn't know how to scale a team. He didn't know how to share his vision so that this business could scale. And so that's been like some of those big key differences. So it's not that one is right or one is wrong, but I'm really glad that my journey was kind of working outside of the family business and taking this on. And it's served me really well so far.
And it served a company well.
So you joined the company. Did your dad stay on for a period of time? And so you came in, as you've just mentioned, with, you know, the amazing training that you got in the hospitality industry and that time you spent outside the company. I'm also curious to know what were kind of the first things, the first challenges that you faced as you were starting to take the reins from your dad?
Yeah, it was overwhelming to say the least. So I came in and we overlapped with each other for about a year. So for about a year, I was learning everything that he does. I was reviewing everything. In my first 2 weeks, I came in and I sat down between 60 and 90 minutes with every single employee. So he had about 20 people on the team at that point, and I wanted to hear from everyone. I said, tell me what's working here, what's not working, like, I'm here to help the company grow. Like, tell me all of your ideas, things that you disagree with, like, what's going on here? And I gathered a lot of information that way. I gathered a lot of information by just watching and observing everything. And it really did take a full year, year and a half to absorb everything and understand what to prioritize. I remember having this massive whiteboard in that year of like all the things we needed to change. Like, we needed to put an ERP system in place. We needed to change the team. We needed to start working on proprietary blends. We needed to redo all of our accounting processes. But it's like, where do you start? It was absolutely endless. And so it's been 8 years and I've just been tackling literally all those changes that I identified in year one, like slowly but surely, one by one. And then bringing on the right people to help accelerate that at a faster pace has been the biggest game changer for me.
How big is the team today?
So today we're about 45 people.
And how intensive is manufacturing for you? And I know there's a lot of proprietary blends, even though some of the ingredients, you know, kind of exist on the market already, you have come up with formulas that are unique and specific to the brand.
Yeah. So one of the biggest things we wanted to focus on was a lot of people know organic traditions if they shop in a health food store, they've been buying it for years, but we don't want people to feel that they need 500 different items in their pantry in order to use superfood.
Which is my case.
Yeah, there's always that type of customer and we love those people too. But you know, our value proposition, our mission as a brand is to empower people to live a healthier life through superfoods. So that means someone who's like brand new to it and you know, they just want to improve those daily habits they already have. So if they're going to drink a coffee every day, then we want it to be a mushroom coffee. If they're going to have a hot beverage, maybe instead of a hot chocolate, they could have our chocolate latte with ashwagandha, like looking for just little things to level up. So backing up a bit, we really made a commitment in 2020 to focus all of our product development on things that are proprietary blends that make it easy for people to use superfoods in their daily life. So we wanted to bring together multiple different superfood ingredients into one product and make that like their go-to so they don't need to pick up 20 items. And it's really paid off for us. That new innovation that we've launched since 2020 actually accounts for more than 50% of our total revenues. So it has resonated with consumers. It's following those trends of people wanting like functional foods and beverages. And then to answer your initial question, we do our own manufacturing. So that is from a leadership standpoint and like an organizational standpoint, it's almost like having two completely different businesses. A lot of brands out there, some of our competitors, they get everything co-packed. And so it's really a sales and marketing organization for them. For us, it's the sales and marketing side and the finance and the operations and all of that. And then it's the actual manufacturing that we do as well. So I'm proud that we do it, but it is a different beast. And it's like running two different teams. And you're always trying to instill in everyone that it's one team, one goal. That's always a constant challenge, but something I'm proud that we've been able to overcome.
Were there any challenges around, you know, you took over the reins from your dad, he had been running the show for a long time. Did you find it easy to kind of step into that position of leader? Did the team also, you know, immediately agree with that new change or the change in management? Were there any obstacles around that? And also, you're a woman in the business who's coming in with no prior experience in the industry. I mean, you are related, so there is kind of that succession element from that point of view. But what kind of obstacles
didn't know what to expect. And I would say 80% of people were open arms. They're like, if you're saying you're here to make everything better and make it a better place to work, then like, I'm on board, let's go. I think as you scale and change things in any organization, you're always going to find the people that like just don't want to change. It's just, they're just going to find reasons why they don't want to change. And unfortunately, when that happens, it's just trying to show them like, this is where we're going. So if you want to come with us, like, here we go. And sometimes as we really went into our next few iterations of growth, like there were some people that chose not to come along the way. But I'd say I was pretty warmly welcomed by most of the team. Any challenges I faced in that regard are really because of the expectations that I put on myself. You know, the pressure you put on yourself is so much more than what anybody else puts on you. But coming into this role, it's like you don't have a boss necessarily. Everyone's reporting to you. How do you check yourself? Who's telling you that you're doing a good job? How are you keeping yourself organized? So I put a lot of pressure on myself to make sure I was doing a good job because it was so important to me that everyone else felt supported and that they were able to do a good job because I had at least had that example. And like I said, in other organizations. So I knew what I wanted it to look like, but it's been an ongoing challenge and something that I face leading a team this whole time. And as a woman too, I think you have to like have that masculine energy a little bit sometimes. It's not that someone's telling me to be that way, but you feel like you need to be that way. And sometimes I have to be like, whoa, like this feels so wrong to just be so tapped into like masculine energy like that. I know that sounds like a bit woo-woo, but it's true. The biggest thing that's helped me overcome it though is honestly asking for help and admitting that you don't know everything. Like you have a vision, you have your gut and you have the grit because you're the entrepreneur, but you have people that can support you to get there that know way more than you know. And the second you're willing to admit that to yourself, it's so much easier.
You answered my next question because I was going to say, how did you find solutions to that? So what does that look like? And I like to ask women about that trusted network of external advisors, the people who did step in and provide help. What did that look like then? And who do you find you still rely on today for that ongoing support?
Yeah, for me, it was kind of like three phases. So because you don't know what you don't know. And especially over the past 2 years, it was for me all about building out the right people to lead each department. So getting the right team leads in place. It's so hard to find good people, I think, in any business, just that really fit your culture and understand your vision and have the right skill and experience. It's tough. But I was lucky. I built out a really, really great leadership team, especially over the past 2 years. And that has helped the company grow immensely and helped guide me in what I should do and where I should spend my time. So that was number one. Number two was in the early days, like first 5 years of running everything, I was just so head down grinding that I didn't really network that much. I didn't go to a lot of events. And like it was COVID, I had two babies and all of these things. I was just very focused on the business and making sure that things were moving forward. But in the past 18 months, I'd say I've joined a number of different founders groups with other founders where we do calls every month, or I go to a number of events and I'm in Slack communities. And it's been very helpful just to have people that can relate to you as a founder and an entrepreneur, both in your industry and just industry agnostic. That's been a game changer. And then the last thing is we recently set up an advisory board. So we never had anything formal like that. And now we have an advisory board with some industry experts and some people who have just been leaders in CPG and in marketing for years and years. And it's just so cool because to finally work with people that have like done what you're trying to do for 20 years for like huge brands, and they're telling you like, you're doing a good job, or try this, or have you thought about this? Getting questioned and challenged at that level is something that when you're the one leading the team, you don't get on a day-to-day basis. So setting up the advisory board, I'd say, is that third layer that's been really, really great more recently for me.
This season of the Brand is Female podcast is made possible with the support of TD Women in Enterprise and Dirt About Confidently Building You. As a woman entrepreneur myself, I know I need all the support I can get. It takes sound advice plus guidance to the right connections, tools, and resources. What's great about TD services for women in business is their collaborative approach. TD can facilitate and connect you to workshops, coaching, and mentorship, and they engage other like-minded business leaders in an authentic way so we can share experiences and learn from each other. TD Women in Enterprise has banking specialists who are able to be proactive in the advice and guidance they give to women in business.
And is your dad still involved in the company at all, or did he completely step away in?
No, he completely, I don't like to say retired because he's not the retirement type. Like he's
farming right now. That is not a retired lifestyle.
Truly, yeah. Yeah. I think it's 52 acres. They're farming day in, day out. They have all these projects with like the community there and they love it. So he's not retired, but he's not involved in organic traditions the day to day at all.
So curious to know, in that process, for listeners who might be considering, you know, a similar succession process, did you work with financial partners as well? I don't know what the financing strategy looked like when you stepped in. And did you source new partners to kind of help support the growth of the company in the upcoming years?
Yeah, so actually, we're undergoing a capital raise right now, and it's our first time raising capital for the brand. We have been bootstrap and just worked with debt for the growth of the brand up until now. Now that we're hitting this like great momentum and we have so many pieces fully in place for like true growth, we are raising capital to support the marketing and the things that you need to do to really grow a brand at that pace and at that level. But when he came kind of off board, we still continue to work with our own cash flow and just small amounts of debt with like banks. And this will be our first time raising capital now.
Well, congratulations on taking that on. And how's the process going? And I was going to ask too, in general, is there enough support for women entrepreneurs? And have you found that you aren't getting the support that you need? And, you know, this can be government or organizations, government programs, also from the community at large, from financing organizations. What's been your experience?
I would say that, you know, you always hear that it's harder for women to raise capital. And I do believe that that's true. And I know that like the statistics and all like the reporting says that that's true. And I believe it. That being said, my experience so far has been very positive. I've had great people connect me all over the community in Toronto. The finance community that helps support businesses has been really wonderful. I was a part of a specific program that's all about pitching for capital that's targeted to women. And it's a government program. I can't remember the name of it, but I went through like a 6-week call cycle with various experts and they set it up just for women because of this issue. But that was an Ontario government program. So there are things in place. I think that it's easy to say like, it's just harder for women. And that might be true. I do believe it, but my experience has been more on the positive side. And I find that people really do want to see you succeed. They do want to see a Canadian small, medium-sized business succeed. And I don't feel like I'm specifically being discriminated against as a woman raising capital. There was one call that I've been on in this process, and I've done like, I feel hundreds of calls at this point over the past month or two. Only one call where they said, you know, at the beginning of the deck, there was an introduction about the family and my dad started it and now I run it and just like a little bit of an about us page. And there was a picture that from a brand photo shoot of me with my two kids. And so we were halfway through the deck. It was much later on. And someone said to me, you know, you really want to be able to prove to investors that you're all in on this. So you should consider taking that photo out. And I was like, well, if they think that I'm not all in on this because I have two kids, then we're just not aligned and I won't be taking capital from that investor.
Like, good answer.
I said, if anything, the fact that I didn't take maternity leave 2 times in a row and I continued to scale the business despite all of that is all the more reason to leave the photo in there.
And they would never have challenged a man who included, you know, a photo of his family in a deck. And they would never challenge the fact that he's a dad. And how is that going to affect his commitment to the business?
Yeah, like, how can you prove that you're all in on this? And it's like, I've been you know, grinding away for 8 years here. I don't think anyone's questioning that. So that was one example, but honestly, that's one of over 100 calls that I've had where that's come up.
So, it seems to be the exception in your case, which would be, you know, moving in the right direction because we do hear from women entrepreneurs.
But it's just interesting still. Yeah. And you're just like, huh, there it is.
Yeah. Then the stats show it as well. And I think it depends. It's probably even more prevalent in specific industries. And speaking of industries, you know, you're kind of overlapping the wellness category and the packaged foods category as well. There seems to be tremendous growth in that sector where, you know, we've seen a few examples of Canadian brands have a really interesting success in that space. Have you seen that change and are you seeing new opportunities within the industry?
Yeah, I think that we're seeing, like I said, in 2017, I was noticing so much growth and I was like, oh, I got to get in on this. This is so interesting. There's so much room to grow still. And we've only continued to see that grow. So people, 1 in 4 millennial shoppers, which millennials are now the leading grocery shopper in market, 1 in 4 are looking for food and beverages that are going to improve their health. And 50% are looking for functional food and beverage. So it's just become more and more common now for people. They don't just want something to taste good. They want it to do something for them. They are looking for that function. So I don't just want to drink this coffee or whatever. I want it to also have probiotics and help me with my gut health. And it's just become the norm of what people are looking for. And then you have the marketing and the greenwashing on top of that, that's just exacerbating it further and kind of driving why the industry has continued to grow so much, the CPG, but in wellness and health specifically. So it's exciting. I do find that like when people aren't reading the labels and they're just falling for like kind of that green washing message on the front of pack of things, it does bug me because I'm just like, it's not doing what you want it to do, guys. But that's me. I'm a very niche consumer. But at the end of the day, it's moving people in the right direction of cleaner food options and really seeing brands like us steal market share from some of the more legacy, not so healthy companies that are out there. So that's great progress that we're seeing.
And well, you've made reference to your children and we know you're all in and you know, are still a mom. What's it like in your everyday life? And I hate kind of the myth that's being pushed on women of, you know, perfect work-life balance. I don't think such a thing exists, but we make do. And in certain times of our lives, we prioritize certain things. How do you try to find balance and kind of stay grounded within, you know, all these elements that would be pulling at you on a daily basis?
Yeah, it's a challenge every single day. I don't think balance exists. And there's certain months or like a couple weeks at a time that feel so much more intense than others. And like with anyone, when there's a deadline or something big that you're focused on. But my biggest hack, and like people hate this, but it's just true, is waking up before my kids is absolutely life-changing. I have to wake up before them in order to own my day.
So what time is that at if you wake up before your kids?
5:15. So today is an example. Most weekdays are like this. I wake up at 5:15. I do my like morning lemon water, ACV, salt. I go work out for about an hour. After that, make a matcha or a protein shake or something light. And then I go get ready. And then I wake them up at like 7:30, spend an hour with them doing breakfast, getting them ready till about 8:30. We drive to school. I drop them off. I come to the office 3 days a week. Otherwise, I go back home. Typically, it's team meetings, calls. I try to block like certain days for internal stuff, certain days for external stuff. I try to block thinking time because otherwise it's just meeting after meeting after meeting. And I feel like I'm not executing anything. So I'm really intentional with my time. Really, really intentional. But I go through the day like that and then pick them up, or my husband picks them up and we're home. We're having dinner together at 5:30, putting them to bed by like 7:30. And then I have 1 hour of free time before I go to bed like by 9 to do it all over again.
It's a pretty good routine. You have to keep running it tightly, but
I have to have the discipline to go to bed after that hour. Cause like, of course I could, like I'm tired, but I could stay up longer, but then I don't get that morning time. And then it feels like my whole life is falling apart. So It's like being super intentional with the calendar and having time for myself before waking them up. If not, I feel like I'm already behind. And one thing I'll say is I do have a nanny. I have help. So I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing day in, day out without that help. And so asking for help, whether it's for an hour or a day, is so important. I just wouldn't be able to function. And I'm fully, you know, aware of that.
I mean, that seems to be a pretty good, you've basically hacked the system so that it works for you. And I love how you're also incorporating, you know, there's wellness time, there's time for personal time for you. And obviously it's very on brand, but obviously finding time to consume the superfoods that are going to keep you fueled up. What would be on your vision board? I know you're in the process of raising capital, so that's probably a big piece of it. But for the year to come, what's the big thing that you are tackling next?
The biggest thing I'm tackling that I can talk about, which I'm really excited about, is we are going to be undergoing a brand positioning and visual identity refresh. So as you know, we kind of chatted about this. We've been in market for over 20 years and we have so much credibility and loyalty and people who love the brand and they see it everywhere. But there's still so many people that don't have the brand recall. Like when I say, yeah, Organic Traditions, until I pull up a photo and show them the logo and they're like, I have 20 things in my pantry, but I had to show you. So there's that issue we want to solve. And there's the issue of we really want to be seen as a wellness brand platform, a lifestyle company, more than just an ingredients brand. Like, yeah, I buy your chia, I buy your flax. Like, no, we really have solutions for people and we have easy ways for them to come into the superfoods category. And that's how we want to position ourselves. So we're going to be undergoing this whole process of brand repositioning and then coming out of that also our visual identity, our logo, our colors. What do we look like? What do we sound like? How do we connect with our consumers so that we can go much, much deeper with the people who know us and love us, but we can be more approachable to people who are new to the category entering every day? Because there's new people that decide they're ready to start a health and wellness journey every single day. There's constantly new people coming in, and I want to be able to be a home for those people and capture those people while maintaining the people that already know us and love us. So it's a huge challenge, but really, really exciting. I'm so excited to see like what that ends up manifesting to look like. I can't even picture right now what it's going to be, but it's like we need to be able to be recognizable. You need to be able to say, I've seen that brand before, but like all new at the same time.
Well, that is really something to look forward to for you as a brand and for us as consumers. And in closing, if you had to pick two or three pieces of advice, maybe things that you wish you had known before starting this process or things you learned along the way, what kind of wisdom would you impart with fellow women in business?
Okay. So number one would be really, really think about your niche. So not just what your brand is or what your service is or what you do, but also who you're going after. Don't dilute your efforts and stretch yourself too thin. Really going super deep on who you're connecting with before you go wide is the best way to grow traction and get consumer insights. So that's number one thing I would say is just focus. Go super deep, super niche before you go wide. Number two is ask for help earlier than later. Ask for help. Admit when you don't know things. Network with people. Be open to taking advice, taking feedback. Most people are good people and most people do really want to help you. And then number three, I think, is also just remember where you came from. So don't forget what you're doing and what you're here for. You really need to have that passion for what you're doing to sustain you, because there's ultimately always going to be challenges. Things do get very hard. But if you're passionate about what you're doing and you remember that that's why you're doing it, you will be able to get through those rough times, even when it doesn't feel like it in the moment. So make sure that it is passion that's driving you, and then remember that.
That's really good advice. I love that. And you're obviously putting that into action yourself. So that's wonderful to watch. Thank you so much, Ali. It's been great hearing about your journey. Love the succession story. And you've really made the brand and the company your own. So that's wonderful to watch. Can't wait to see the rebranding and what comes up next for Organic Traditions. And thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you to TD Women and Enterprise for their support of The Brand is Female. You've got it in you to succeed. Let TD help guide you. Visit thebrandisfemale.com to learn more. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Brand is Female podcast. It means a lot if you subscribe to our show, leave us a review, and engage with us on social media. A huge thank you to our team who makes these episodes possible. Lina Orbegozo Espinoza is our sound engineer. Jacqueline Cohen is our assistant producer, and Naomi Kixmuller-Gosley is our senior PR manager.